This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
I'm Andrew Johnstone, and you're listening to The Last Breath, the podcast about death and dying, brought to you by Hospice Waikato and Free FM, the Waikato's community access media organisation. In this episode, clinical nurse specialist Julia Ward talks about her work caring for patients in aged care facilities.
You don't know how it feels. You know, when people say, oh, I know how you feel. Well, you don't know how they feel, but you know how you feel as a person. So you can't, I don't think you can ever know how somebody else feels. You know, when they say, oh, somebody says, oh, something, whatever happened. Yeah, I know how you feel. Well, I don't really believe you do know how they feel.
Is grief unique for every person?
Well, grief is so unique, and it's different aspects of grief. And I guess in my role as clinical nurse specialist, and I focus entirely on visiting people in the aged care facilities. That's my role. So grief manifests itself in more than the grief of what, you know, their life-limiting illness. It's the grief of the loss of their home, their role, relationships, independence, autonomy. You know, they're behind their own front door, wherever they live, and they move in, you know, they move into a facility, which they have their own door to a room, but it's communal living with people they don't know, which I think is quite frightening. Frightening, not as in being physically threatened, but frightening because of the loss of control. And it's I guess that's the grief that I walk with people, that most people, you know, they're going to walk through the front door, and that'll probably be the last door that they walk through before they leave. They're going to continue to walk, but you know what I mean. That'll be their last place of residence. Mm. And, you know, the days have gone when, I remember when I was younger, and people went to live in rest homes because, you know, that was for the retired gentlefolk. And I don't think that was a particularly British thing. But obviously I didn't live here in New Zealand, but, you know, you've got to meet a criteria to get into, and I'm going to call it aged care because that's how, if you Googled it, but actually for people who are no longer able to live at home, then there are people there who are under 65. So it's, you know, maybe the criteria might be over 65s, but when somebody's referred to hospice, you know, they might be living with a life-limiting illness and they're below that age, but they're not able to be cared for at home, or they, whatever their circumstance. So what are the options? In days gone by, years gone by, people remained in hospital long-term, but obviously that's not, there's no capacity, and so where else would somebody else move to? So it's the aged care facilities that become the place of their care, but they're not aged. You know, they're under 65, and that's another whole thing of you can't walk in their shoes. You might think you know how they feel, but you don't know how they feel unless you've experienced that yourself. And even your own experience, you can't transpose that onto somebody, because we're all feeling and experiencing things differently. So my role with hospice is purely facing the people who are living in care facilities. That might be a rest home, a hospital, which isn't the same as a public hospital.
So this is a hospital and a residential care facility?
Yes, yeah. So it's nurse-led. There's no doctors on. The doctor visits, but it's nurse-led. And then there are some areas that have got secure areas for people living with cognitive impairment.
Dementia,
Alzheimer's. Yeah. So that's the work that I do. As a clinical nurse specialist, I take hospice philosophy and principles of care to the aged care facilities in order to support the person, their family, their whānau, those significant people. And then on the other side of the coin, my role is very collaborative with the team in the facility, because they're the primary carers for the person now. So it's my job. It's like a complicated dance sometimes. It feels like I'm doing a bit of like plate spinning. You know, I've got to keep the plate and sort of navigating communication and navigating maybe principles of maybe what the best practice would be around symptom management, and trying to upskill and educate and demonstrate my experience that I've gleaned from a lot of years of working in specialist palliative care here and back in the UK.
So how long have you been a nurse for, Julia?
Well, I was 37 when I qualified.
Which is late.
Yeah, and that was really because of when we were first married. My husband was in the Air Force in Britain and left and then went into the police force. So we were moving around a lot. And after our son was born, that was a bit of a watershed moment of, you know, sort of being in the arena of nursing and thinking, oh yeah, this is how, yeah, maybe I could. A lot of friends left school and became nurses, and that wasn't the right time for me. But I think it was about the timing, and I'd had a lot of different jobs and careers, you know, lots of different experiences, and I think that life experience that I got from working in very different areas of life, I think that probably made it so that I was probably mature enough to be to become a nurse. And although being 37 when I qualified, it was interesting because I might have been on the ward, and a family would come to talk to the nurses, and a lot of the nurses were younger than me, and they'd see my face and like, oh, she's older, she must know. And I would be like, oh, don't talk to me. Talk to them. But my experience has caught up with my age now. Yes, so nearly 30 years since I started my training.
And when did you get drawn into palliative care?
Almost straight away. When I started my training, we had a neighbour, and her son was living with a condition called muscular atrophy. A young, just 2-year-old woman when we moved in next door, and you know how she learned to nurse him at home, giving some, you know, some pretty full-on nursing procedures, giving him intravenous antibiotics at home, and, you know, I'm going back a long time. So that sort of gave me that. But I'd always really had an interest in health. But I think, you know, when I started my training, because of the experiences of my placement, which weren't necessarily adult nursing, but with nurses who see people, such as the young guy with this life-limiting disease, and people with intellectual disabilities. And that just opened my eyes, thinking that, you know, that people are living, but they're not going to live to the full potential of their life. And I remember sitting with my tutor and saying, you know, I think I'm one of, in the UK it's called Macmillan Nursing, that's the charity, but it's basically palliative care. And she, you know, maybe because I was a little bit older, but I found myself drawn to it. It was something I was always comfortable with. Not really sure why. There are a lot of things in nursing that I wouldn't be comfortable with. I wouldn't want to be a midwife or, you know, that end of the scale. But that's something I've become drawn to. And I suppose because of the work that you do and the people that you meet. And yeah, I think I got the opportunity to move into a brand new role it was 20 years ago now, in the community where they were looking for people to look after people who weren't necessarily living with cancer. So people living with respiratory, heart, end-stage kidney disease. And they had, it was a real step up. It was an advanced nurse practitioner role. So I'd only been qualified for 6 years, and I'd really, and again, maybe that was because I was older and mature and was focused. But the job title was community matron. And it was like, this is the daftest job title, you know. It was all the Carry On movies. Who matron? You know. It was all about in the NHS. So we're trying to bring back the matron, because the word matron has the gravitas of maybe somebody with more power and more authority. So I did that for 7 years before we moved here. And if I'd wanted to continue, I would have had to have retaken my qualifications, and I didn't want to do that. So I'm happy where I sit now as a clinical nurse specialist. I can, you know, I can bring lots of different experiences, but at that expert level. But also trying to demonstrate it in a very, in a fashion that doesn't seem that I come across as I know everything. You know, I learn from the people who I come into contact with every day. We never stop learning. We never stop honing our skills. And so it's a two-way process, but I think the job title clinical nurse specialist does give you a little bit of... It demonstrates that you're a registered nurse working at a higher level of expertise.
So you're a specialist in some ways.
Yes, specialist and I specialise in palliative care.
Now, that's interesting what you said before about palliative care, because when I hear that word, I instantly think of cancer. But of course, in reality, we're talking about a range of illnesses and diseases. Say kidneys,
life-limiting. Neurological conditions, diabetes. Yeah, there are numerous. You know, people think palliative care, cancer, but people struggle to understand even what the word palliative care is.
Describe it to me, please.
Well, as a professional, I'm really clear, but I'm very aware that in the general population, people regard palliative care as being the last days of somebody's life. When in fact, palliative care begins much earlier in somebody's disease trajectory. So palliative care begins when a person's health condition can't you know, can't be reversed. There's no cure. So somebody might be living with kidney problems and then they need dialysis. So that's, but they're still having treatment, try to manage their condition. So that's where, but it's palliative focused because it's not curative. But I think it's still hard for people to get their head around because people have the conception of palliative care being when there's nothing else can be done. But in palliative care, we've got a vast amount of things that we can do. It's like a less is more, less of trying to correct and trying to treat, but more of the holistic approach.
Management?
Holistic, so that, you know, the thinking of the person, thinking of the not only the physical, but the emotional, the psychological, the spiritual. You know, in New Zealand, we've got the model of care called Te Whara Tapawha, which was a model that developed by Mason Jury. And that's, you know, that's actually looking at the whole, you know, the whare, the strong walls of the house and trying to keep everything in balance. It's not only used in palliative care, it's used in mental health. Because it's, you know, you've got, if you're going to care for somebody, you've got to consider all the domains of somebody and trying to bring balance, to restore peace, if you like. That's maybe one way of thinking. And it's not always possible, but it's a way that our philosophy of care, honouring a person, whatever they are, and trying to bring the care that a care plan, if you like, that suits their, meets their needs. So palliative care is a little bit like the elephant in the room. You know, people don't want to talk about palliative care because they think it's the door. But, you know, good palliative care, a palliative approach, can actually help bring quality of life to the remaining time that somebody has.
So you specialise in people and aged care facilities and rest homes. Mm. And as you said earlier, it's complicated because suddenly they've got a life.
Yeah.
And they have a home. And
they're a person still.
And they have friends and they have hobbies and activities and interests and they have a history.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, that's all taken away.
Mm.
And
they're behind a door with a number on it.
And it must be lonely, it must be confronting.
Mm. Yeah.
A lot of emotional struggle.
Yeah.
Not for everybody, but for...
I guess people may struggle on different levels. One of the biggest struggles people have is around the financial struggle. So sometimes a referral will come to hospice when somebody's been in Waikato Hospital, and from a medical perspective, the assessment is that they might be in the last 6 weeks of life. So they get funding from the hospital, from Health New Zealand, DSL, the Disability Support Link, and that they're funded for 6 weeks in aged care. Now, it's an arbitrary time because somebody may come to the end of their life within that 6 weeks, but they may live beyond that. Because it's, you know, medicine is a science, but you're looking at a human being, and there's more to, there's that free will that sometimes, you know, people outlive. You know,
expectations.
Yeah, because of who they are, or, you know, they're, for whatever reason.
So what happens when they outlive the funding window?
So the funding, it's fairly seamless, but it means that has to be another reassessment, which is carried out by the DSL, and they would be either reassessed as being the rest home level, but more likely the hospital level of care. And sometimes people actually want to go home. So I guess there are options, but this financially, it becomes perhaps they might, you know, around the financial assessment, people want to leave a legacy, and I think that's where our hospice social workers do such a great job, because they help guide people to understand what the process is and try to help them manage their fears around what the financial implications are.
So what you're saying is that people want to leave money for their children.
Yeah, that's their legacy, that financial legacy.
And they don't want it all swallowed up in their care in their last days.
Yeah. And that's often why people sometimes they struggle at home, because they want to be at home. And I think that's another perhaps way that maybe that people could, until you're faced with it, maybe you don't know. It's like anything in life. You don't need to know about something until you're there, and then you need to be the expert and catch up pretty fast. And if you've got the preconceived ideas around palliative care or moving into aged care, whatever that might be, then you know that it's another stress. So when a person's moved into, you know, moves into a care facility, you know, for their loved ones, that might be, you know, they've got that in their head, that clock's ticking, and it can cause a lot of distress. You know, the doctor or the medical team felt that somebody was going to have a very short prognosis of time, but then it's moved beyond there. And sometimes people, they don't want to stay where they are. They want to look, you know, it's, I guess if they've got that opportunity, they might think they've had a limited choice, because it's like you've got to find somewhere and move. And then maybe if they've got more time, they might want to exercise their choice to find somewhere else. But that's another, how do they go about doing that?
And that's your job?
No, we really, that's something that our social workers would help the family or the person, you know, the person with themselves. But it's a conversation I get involved with, because if I'm going to review somebody, I'm not just going to say, oh, how's your breathing today? Mm-hmm. Because what might be causing some anxiety might be the emotional or the social concerns that are affecting their symptom. And people, you know, they'll tell you about that. And I try to explore, you know, how you're feeling and what's on top and what's, you know, what can we talk about today that's, what's your concern, not my agenda. So I might hear something that isn't necessarily a nursing issue, but it is, because it's like a set of dominoes. One thing knocks onto another, you know, when you put the dominoes on. Yeah, so
it's the foray thing, it's the whole picture.
It's the whole thing, yeah, the whole thing of the that sort of being in the balance. And it's a very uncertain time. I mean, maybe sometimes people move into aged care from their own home, and maybe that might be perhaps a little bit more of a planned or a slower process. But maybe somebody's come to a crisis point and they have to move, and there's been the crisis of the hospital admission. So they've had all of that to deal with, and then they can't go home to, well, the family might take them back to the family home, but then they've got to go back to the care facility. You know, the care facilities, you know, people have weekend leave, and they've got, you know, they can, it's not a fortress, you know, but I suppose if you're assessed as needing that level of care, you know, they, in my experience, facilities try to be so flexible. And, you know, it's not just hospice taking this holistic view. You know, they really do try to, engage with the person, their family, really trying to understand what the person's likes and dislikes are, understand them as a person, you know, about their life story, because that is such an important part of caring for somebody. This is just a little bit of their life, not hopefully just a small part, not their whole person and how they've got there. And some people present differently. So how do you know, they take the time to get to know somebody. And but again, that's another, it's, you know, when somebody's been used to just looking after themselves, and then suddenly they've got other people knocking on the door and doing their laundry. I mean, it sounds ideal if you wanted it for a short period of time. I'm saying that tongue in cheek, but I think it's a roller coaster, and some people move into that space easier than others. I guess that's how we are, how human beings, people adapt.
How many people are you caring for at any one time, Julia?
Well, within the team, there are 4 clinical nurse specialists, and we roughly have, I would say, between 60 and 70 people, hospice patients who are resident in aged care. But sometimes it might be more. We've got people who are sort of in, they're not fully resident, if you like. They might be having a respite care, or they might be having different funding streams.
So, when we say respite care, so that means they're having a break from their home or their family?
Potentially either. It's usually around sort of care or support, so that, you know, with the view that they may go back home, or they might have some funding where they've been in hospital and they're having some, convalescence is such an old-fashioned word, but it's giving them that sort of space before they potentially go back home again. But often we'll get a referral to hospice for the person who's in this transitional time, if you like. So it might be they come under the hospice CNS caseload, or they may then transfer to the community nursing caseload, depending on what their specialist palliative care need is. Because maybe, and I guess that's the thing about palliative care and specialist palliative care, I'm sure you've heard this definition from other conversations you've had, because palliative care can be managed in the community, depending on what the person's needs are, but sometimes that escalates up to a specialist. So, for example, you might go to your GP to have your blood pressure monitored, but then, you know, your GP's gone through all the treatments and he needs that extra level, so he'll refer you to the specialist. So that's what hospice is. We're the specialist in palliative care, but generalist palliative care. Think of it like a triangle. We're the tip of the triangle, but underneath that, generalist palliative care has happened and has continued, maybe without the label of the labelling of that, but that's the difference between the two. And I guess there are 65 facilities, I think, in the Waikato. So often we sit, you know, that's a lot of people who are, but not all of those people are referred to hospice, because they're, you know, the part of the role of the clinical nurse specialist is taking our knowledge and our educators in hospice to upskill the registered nurses there, to give them more confidence and competence in managing people with palliative care, but they don't need that step up. And when we do visit and we see a person who's been referred to hospice, we always encourage the nurses to come with us, so they can be with us too, almost as a witness of how we explore and how we sort of manage that that conversation, because it's sometimes it can be tough for people who've nursed in areas where palliative care isn't a focus. Say, for example, nurses from the Philippines, or I'm an international nurse. You know, international nurses come from a completely different mindset of healthcare. But here they are in New Zealand, in the context of aged care,
where the culture's a bit different.
So many cultures. You know, we're talking about the culture of the facility, the culture of, yeah, let's think, you know, it's the New Zealand culture, the culture of the facility, the person's culture, the culture of the team, their individual cultures within that team, and then the culture of the health service, the culture of their family, their whānau, their beliefs. You know, it's aged care facilities are like a little
microcosm
of the whole of society. Mm. And it's a really specialist area of care, which, you know, the teams that care for people in aged care, they, you know, they have to have such wide ranging skills, because there might be a facility where there are 80 residents, but they could have a vast degree of difference of needs. So having that knowledge to do that, you know, that's aged care is a specialist area of care, and it breaks my heart when, you know, I go to facilities and they say, oh, I just work in aged care. It's an area that they should be proud to work in, because actually being involved in somebody's care at this is the last period of somebody's life, and it's really significant, and that is a privilege to be able to go to work and work in their home. You know, that's what it's aged care is, their home. Nurses are, you know, that they're working in the person's home, and myself as a clinical nurse specialist from hospice, I'm a visitor. You know, I'm a guest, and always aware that, you know, I'm got to gain the trust and work. The word collaborative is off, you know, it's used, but it's you know how I navigate my relationships with the team and the patients and the whānau. Sometimes it can be a little bit triangulated, but, you know, try to bring it all back and because it's such a tough time, and people, you know, what their expectations might be, and trying to help them navigate so that they can come to a consensus of how they move forward about, you know, with those relationships. That's often something that we get involved with in our team. And it's all about trying to focus on what's important for the person or the resident, and once we can get, you know, that once those things are much more openly discussed, then that helps things move forward. But sometimes the role is a little bit around helping with those expectations, and just to help navigate for the benefit of their loved one, because that's really they're coming from a place of concern. You know, they've want, and maybe for them, I don't know if you've ever, anybody in your family's moved into aged care. In my own family, when my grandparents did, that was it was a relief for my mum and dad in some regards, but it gave them the confidence that they were being cared for 24 hours a day. But for my grandparents, they wanted to stay at home. They didn't understand. So there was a lot of I remember there was a lot of conflict, but I wasn't really old enough to get involved with the communication. But I guess you can just see how things mirror, you know, and how that can be. But I've just been in a facility today, and they're I don't know. I think the vibe is changing. You know, I often think about when am I a secret shopper? Am I sort of looking around for when I might, you know, and when I'm, maybe it's when I'm in my 80s, am I going to be doing, you know, am I doing some punk rock or something? Because, you know, but even the music is played, you know, the music that's played, it's not necessarily, I don't know, music from the 40s and the 50s, because the age range is changing and the demographic is changing, especially when people are cared for there who will be below that age. So, you know, they do make a lot of effort to try to provide activities, because, you know, try to give them a structure to the day, to replace the structure that they might have had. And sometimes people actually blossom in a care, knowing that there's somebody there. It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
To finish up, Julia, do you have any reflections or words of wisdom you'd like to share with us?
Wow. I think I think we shouldn't be afraid of death. I think talking about what's important to somebody when they're still able to have that conversation. Yeah, I think that would be, because once somebody is not able to talk themselves or they've died, they can't come back and tell the family what's important to them. And death is a big word, you know, it's a big scary word. But the more we talk about it, the more I think it helps take that fear away.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.